Thanks, Eileen. Thank you very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Enjoy the show.
Good afternoon on this Tuesday afternoon. How are you? If you want to contact the show or programme, whatever you'd like to call it, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. It's day two of the World Potato Congress down in the RDS. It's big news, and it made the news last night. Hundreds and hundreds of people in. Hundreds of thousands of pounds of stones of potatoes. And later on, we'll be speaking to Georgia Thomas of Western Australia Potatoes. They have a magazine devoted exclusively to potatoes out there. And Georgia's going to be bringing us in samples of that. And we'll be trying potato milk live on air. Bet you can't wait. The excitement of it all. Leon, who's working on the show, went in to find some potato milk for us. And he had to go right into town. And we finally found it in Fallon and Bourne. It's available in other shops around the country, but that's where we found it. And I'll be tasting it later in coffee and with a cereal. So there. Potato milk and Georgia Thomas. Did you know that sweet potato isn't actually a potato? It's a swollen root. And did you know that crisps were invented because a chef got in a bit of a narc with one of his customers? He sent out some thickly cut fried potatoes to a man called Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt said, "I do not like your thickly cut fried potatoes. Make them skinnier." And the chef thought he was sort of doing one of those passive aggressive things. And he cut them as skinnily as he could, deep fried them and sent them back out with a bit of salt on them. And thus, ladies and gentlemen, the crisp was born. So the story goes. Well, we're on food, and there's a lot of food stuff doing the rounds today. But it's a universal phenomenon, isn't it? Food, we all have to eat to survive. A map of food being offered at home. So it's by Lover of Geography. And what they've done is they've taken all of the European countries and they've colour-coded them depending on whether you are likely to get offered food as a guest in someone's house or not. So it goes navy, light blue, pink and red. Navy, almost always. Red, very unlikely to give you food. So the countries that are very unlikely to give you food, and it's a cultural thing, I don't think it's about meanness. The Scandinavian countries, so you've Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, very unlikely to give you, Belgium included there. And then countries that are unlikely to give you food, you know, the odd time would be England. I'm looking at Northern France, Germany. Then usually yes, Ireland is in there, so too is Scotland. Southern France, I'm looking at what Poland, probably there, Ukraine, those countries. And then almost always Portugal, Spain, Italy. Of course, food is a big thing there, isn't it? It's more than just surviving. It's more than just perfunctory. It's yum, 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 come on, yum, 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 give me food, give me lovely food. It's an odd thing though on the map because there's a red, which means very unlikely to give you food, somewhere there around the border counties. And I'm not saying anything, but Ireland is there, light blue, usually yes, you would be offered food in this place. And then there's a red, very unlikely to give you food. Just a little spot of red there, up around, I'm not even going to name any counties. I don't know why that is the case. We'll have to search that out and see what happens there. And also on food, Dear Joe Shocknessy on Twitter is asking, why does Ireland not have a culture of pies like the UK? Pastry-based ones. Do we not have the right type of flour skills? That's a good question, isn't it? You know, because they're big on their pies in England. We have the pies the odd time, but we just serve it up like there's a stew. You don't put a bit of pastry on top, because basically that's what a pie is, isn't it? It's a stew or a casserole or something like that, and then slap a bit of pastry on top and you have a pie. It's much ado about nothing, maybe pies are, dear Joe. I don't know. And there's food and health. Like, does a day go by, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, when there isn't a survey or a scientific research result or something like that in the papers about food and health? Anyway, the latest ones, there's a couple of them there. The Journal of Food and Function found that eating the equivalent of 100 grams of fresh cranberries in powdered form, so fresh cranberries in powdered form, each day could potentially increase men's heart health. Yeah, so and then I see that coffee could help your heart health as well, but they don't know to be sure. And for every one that you get saying one thing, you'll get another study saying another thing, and then you have to ask the question, who's doing the research, who's paying for it, why are they telling us now? You know, all of those questions have to be asked. You have to sort of mine down into those figures. Don't just read them at a top line level. Here's an interesting one, because they say that the future of medicine and health is constant monitoring. And they're talking about maybe some sort of subcutaneous chip that we'll all have. And it'll feed back to a central computer, which our doctor or our hospital will be able to see, and they'll be able to monitor everything. All the things that you would go in for a blood test for or a medical for, this little chip will be able to monitor all of that. And then some red light will go off somewhere if, you know, your red blood cell count is low or something, whatever happens like that. There's another thing happening, and this is more imminent than the little chip. A smart tattoo. So researchers from Harvard University and Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, and they have the brightest people in the world, some of the brightest people in the world in those institutions. They're using a biosensitive ink, which possesses the ability to tell long-term diabetes patients if their blood sugar levels are rising. It's like the pH thing that you used. Remember, you put it in, and if it's the pH is low, it turns whatever colour, and then if it's high, if it's acidic, it turns another colour. Anyway, the smart ink changes from green to brown as blood sugar levels increase, which the researchers argue provides a more seamless indication than current wearable monitors. Who would have thought it? A tattoo over technology. I see there as well that Virgin Air are allowing their cabin crew show off their ink, their tattoos. That was in the paper today. And it's probably just that I'm not used to it, but there were people in the uniforms and then they had short sleeves and you could see their tattoos. It looked odd, probably just because I'm not used to it for no other reason than that. We all have names, so we're fascinated by any research to do with names. And the research today is from the University of Michigan. And they found that the popularity of names has predictable cycles. You see, you would have figured this out yourself. You would have figured this out yourself. They found names rise most in popularity when they're most rare. You know what happens then? Of course, they're rare. Then everyone says, oh, yeah, that's that. Nobody's calling their child that name. And of course, everybody calls their child that name. So it becomes very popular. And then nobody calls their child that name for a while. And it comes in cycles. So, for example, I know, and I'm not going to name the name, but in my son's class year, there are 5 girls with the same name. Right, so that particular name will go out of fashion because there are too many of them around. And then in 20, 40 years' time, it'll come back into fashion. And I wonder, then there are names like Mary. Will Mary come back into fashion? Like there were loads of Marys. Anyway, all the names in this particular research are American, so they don't really have significance for us. But it makes complete sense that that there would be cycles of names. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. Hello, pies in Ireland. Fish pie, cottage shepherd's pie, beef in Guinness pie. You see, I think the pies they're talking about is the pastry topped pie. So a fish pie is usually topped with mashed potatoes, as is the cottage shepherd's pie. Beef in Guinness pie, that would have a pastry topping, okay. A pie should have pastry on top, bottom and sides. Aha! So whatever you're putting into it is fully encased. Is the definition of a pie, according to Alex. Thanks, Alex. Thanks for clarifying that for us. 51551 Ray at RTE.ie. I'll tell you about our quiz in a moment, but first a bit of Jesse Buckley and Bernard Butler. This is lovely. Really lovely. Good afternoon. That's nice, isn't it? Jesse Buckley and Bernard Butler. And Footnotes on the Map from their album, which is to be released later on this month. I think that's the current single or maybe the last single. Sounds like Joni Mitchell, says Aaron. Funny you say that, because Jesse was in with us last Friday. We did a pre-record, which we'll be playing out when the album's released. And I did say to her, I said, you sound like a cross between Tori Amos and Joni Mitchell. It's always, you know, what do you say to people? And I thought, anyway, she said, yes, that I'll take that. Thank you very much. And she does. Now, pies. Pies were made for miners, says Regina. They needed to go down the mines and have their lunch down there. It kept the food clean. It was instead of a lunchbox and could be wrapped in a cloth. The miners didn't always eat the pastry. it would be dirty. We didn't have the miners in Ireland. So there. And yet, Mick has been on in the hatch and he says a pie has pastry top and bottom. Throwing pastry on top doesn't make it a pie, Ray. Sorry. And then on the countries that offer you food, if you're a visitor, nothing worse than going into a house hungry and not getting offered a sandwich or something. Well, there is. There is getting offered food and it not being nice. Then you have to eat it. That's the, you'll have it. Go on. And then, you know, there's a Mrs. Doyle there. Go on, go on. You will. No, I'm fine. I just ate. No, you will. And then something's put down in front of you. And you can see from the look of it that you're not going to like it. But manners takes over and you have to force your stomach to take it on board. That's probably worse than not being offered anything. Maybe, maybe not. Now, let's tell you about our quiz, our daily quiz. We're looking for two people to come on after 4 o'clock and answer three questions each on clips they will hear in their ears. That's what we call it, reeling in the ears. Bits of songs, news reports, TV shows and movies. And there is a prize. And today's lucky winner will win a two-night stay at the four-star Fairways Hotel located in the heart of Dundalk in County Louth. Perfect place to gather family, friends and loved ones for your next getaway. While you're staying, discover Dundalk's beautiful scenery, history and heritage in the bustling town centre with its many artisan shops and restaurants. So it's a two-night stay in a beautifully appointed bedroom with dinner on one evening in the Brasserie. And you can find out more, fairwayshotel.ie, fairwayshotel.ie, the four-star Fairways Hotel. So we're looking for two people after 4 o'clock. But first, you must answer our qualifying question, which today is, today is the birthday of an Irish actor from Castleknock. He starred in Intermission, In Bruges, Miami Vice, The Lobster and Ballycus Angel. He's 46 today. Who is he? He's 46 today. Who is he? Starred in Intermission, In Bruges, Miami Vice, The Lobster and Ballycus Angel. 0818 715 925. That's 0818 715 925. And good luck with that.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, or text us 51551. There are loads of Roisins, Ray, says Roisin. Yeah, well, it'd be great to plot your name, Roisin. If you have time, you can get onto the CSO website and go over all the years and map Roisin to see if there was peaks and troughs. My new granddaughter is Mary and her name gets rave reviews everywhere we go, says Frank. And on pies and mining, huge coal mining tradition around Castlecomer and the Swan. So they have pies down there, I wonder. From Castlecomer, we go to Donegal now. They've been celebrating a Buncrana woman who recently climbed to Mount Everest Base Camp. Jennifer Doherty, who is blind since she was 9 months old, completed the grueling 12-day trek with a group of fellow explorers. The group was led by Letterkenny mountaineer Jason Black, who back in 2013 climbed all the way to the top of Mount Everest. Jennifer Doherty and Jason Black are both on the line now. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello, how are you?
Good to talk to you. How are you doing, Jason?
Hey Ray, good to hear you.
Good to talk to you again. Jennifer, congratulations.
Good man.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, how did this come about?
Jason contacted me out of the blue the week before Christmas. I didn't really know him. I'd met him once before. But he asked me if he could meet me. He came to my house and told me his whole story and everything he's done. And he told me he was leading a group of people to base camp in April and would I want to go? And I thought he was absolutely crazy. I was like, who is this person? This is a bit too good to be true. I didn't know what to think. And my brother was there and he said, you know, you should go. I would trust him with my life. He seems really genuine. So I thought, before he left, I told him I would go and I thought I'll worry about the logistics after, so...
And did you use those Linda Martin words, why me? Did you ask him?
Yeah.
What did he say?
I'm still asking him that and he hasn't answered me.
Well, maybe we'll ask him then. Why Jennifer, Jason?
She's just this remarkable person, I suppose, for me. I spent a lot of time in schools working with young people and, you know, I just felt that they were struggling in today's world with some inspiration, especially over the last couple of years. And I suppose it's very easy for Jason Black to stand in a room with all his faculties available to him and go off and do what he does. But I just felt that this remarkable young person that has a limitless mindset. And I had done a little bit of research behind the scenes and I had found out that she was a remarkable human being. And I knew that it would take somebody quite special to take this on, because the route that we took was the 1953 original route from Kathmandu, the one that Tenzing Norgay and Sir Edmund Hillary carried. And we wanted to do it in a non-commercial manner, and I knew it was going to have to be somebody that was mentally very strong. And reached out to Jennifer, knocked on her door, hadn't met her in my life, and walked in, and phenomenal situation. Her brother was sitting there, and he was married to a Nepalese girl, and her dad had sadly passed away a couple of months beforehand, and he had booked his flights to go to Nepal, and it all seemed perfect, and the match seemed right, and we took a punt at it, and it worked out tremendous.
Yeah, and those logistics, Jennifer, that you spoke about, you know, worry about them later. What were they as you came closer to doing it?
So, being completely blind, I was going with a group of people I didn't know. I didn't know Jason. I'd never walked anywhere with him in my life. I would have to depend on people a lot. So things like, we would be staying in tea rooms in a different place every night. I wouldn't be able to learn my way around, or, you know, even go to the bathroom myself. So a lot of the bathrooms would be holes in the ground. I would have to depend on people for a lot more things than I usually would at home. So I didn't want to be a burden on anybody, or, you know, all these things you think about before and worry about. I didn't even know if I'd be fit enough, to be honest. That was a big one.
And there's a huge element of trust there, isn't there? When you're blind with a group of people that you don't know.
Massive. And then, like, go up the side of a mountain with really rough, uneven terrain and altitude and all these things. So you really had to have trust in the people you were with.
So talk to me about the uneven terrain then, because like we do it without even thinking. You look as you walk, particularly if you're going up the side of a mountain. Where can you find footing? Is that a rock? Is that a loose rock? Whatever, you know. So how do you get around that?
You just really have to trust the person you're with. So I would hold on to their elbow when I walk. So I just really had to walk and depend on where they were walking. So if they were nervous, I could feel it.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the more difficult parts and the big steps, I would have walked with Jason and some of the taller people in the group. So it kind of made it a bit easier. They were, you know, stronger and they mightn't have been as nervous. And then other times I walked with different people. So the group were amazing. Everybody took turns at bringing me around and described everything, and I felt like I didn't miss anything because I couldn't see, because everyone was so considerate, and that was great.
That's it though, isn't it? Because everybody who's been up there speaks of the amazing views, and you were above clouds and all that, and you're blind, so you're depending on other people's eyes to see for you.
Yeah. I think the thing that really made it for me was the day Jason said we're walking higher than the helicopters are flying.
Wow.
And then when you could hear them down below you, that really put it in perspective for me. And I was like, oh my God, this is how high we are.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't see the views. But there's so many other sensory things, like you would walk on the bridges and you could hear the yaks coming past with their bells, and turn the prayer wheels, and there's so much things along the trek that even when you can't see, it was so interesting.
And then those flags flapping in the wind is a sound synonymous with Nepal, isn't it? And there, and it wasn't all good, because then there's the squelch of a foot in donkey poo.
Oh, that was the worst day.
Go on.
We were just walking like 2 hours of just this horrible, messy ground, and it was just everywhere and smelly, and you were afraid you would slip because you didn't want to fall in it.
Yeah.
And it was just tough going, but then that ended up being one of my favorite days, because Jason organized for me to have a Sherpa carry. So two of the Sherpas, Karma and Nima, took turns at carrying me down all these steps, like a really steep part of the trek, and I was on their back, and it was just
piggyback.
Amazing.
You got a piggyback down the side of Mount Everest. That's wow.
But it was amazing because I could feel how fast their feet can move, and I mean, they don't even think; they just it's amazing to watch. But to be on their back and feel it is It was something I never even thought I'd get to do, so that was fun.
They are amazing, Jason, aren't they? Sherpas.
Yeah, they're incredible people. The whole culture, I think that's what blew everybody away. I suppose the way we went about it is, you know, as a purist mountaineer, we wanted to take a non-commercial approach. So we went in the kind of the left of centre. But the people were amazing. Whenever they recognised who we were and what we were doing, they were so responding. You know, there was days that Jennifer got a ride in a motorbike and, you know, there she is heading off this really rough dirt track and she's on a motorbike on a section, and then there was times sometimes we needed to jump into a jeep for 200 or 300 meters just to get across a really rough section. They would just pull up, they didn't even know us, and in we'd get and off we'd go. You know, it was just the most amazing journey. And Jennifer got to meet the school kids in Boopsa. We were working with a project there since 2016, rebuilding a school that got hit with a landslide. And we brought in 6 months' worth of copybooks and pens and biros and stuff for the kids, you know, for them to do their homework. And they were just wonderful people. You know, they're very soft and they're very gentle and they're very genuine in their nature. But it's just one thing, you know, that myself and Jennifer talked about as we left Letterkenny, with quite a bit of time in preparation, was Ray, that what was important to me was that Jennifer wasn't going to get wrapped in cotton wool, and what was important to Jennifer was that she wanted to just be treated as a normal human being, even though she had she was blind. It wasn't a limitation. She was able to use other senses, and that's ultimately was the strength of Jennifer. Jennifer went out there was just a normal human being, dealing with her own limitation every day, like we all have limitations, and she pulled it off, and she pulled it off in style. This girl didn't limp to base camp. She ran. She was incredible. There was nine other people there, and there was days they were all giving out about sore feet and sore backs and everything else, and Jennifer was up every morning with a smile on her face saying, okay, what are we doing today? 25k, let's go.
That's good.
And it was phenomenal to watch, and it was an absolute pleasure to guide her.
Ah, wow. So where does this rank, Jennifer, in your life experiences?
Best thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
Easily.
It's amazing what you've achieved. So you, obviously Jason came to you because you've achieved other things. What else have you done?
I flew a plane about 8 years ago. I think that was one of the things Jason noticed.
Right.
I've always kind of just done what I think are normal things, and I don't know, some other people seem to think they're big deals, but I don't really. Like, I've been blind from a very young age. I don't know any different. Mm. And I've always been just brought up in a mainstream school, mainstream environment, and I don't see it as any big deal. I just do what everyone else does.
Yeah, yeah. Shout out to Ranafast County Donegal team, Gavin, Josephine, Megan and Johnny, just back from Conquering Everest Base Camp as well. Please read this out in capital letters. You are inspirational. You are amazing, modest, courageous and sound like the most genuine young woman. You so deserve this incredible experience. I feel I'm living it through you the way you describe it all. Well done to you both. Isn't that lovely? That's from an anonymous texter there. I'm nearly tearing up here. I don't know why, but there is something very emotional about your description, Jennifer, and just what you've achieved, and Jason finding you and bringing you up there and the whole thing. So congratulations to you both. Jason, we'll talk again, I'm sure, and I'm sure we'll hear more about you, Jennifer Doherty, as well. But for the moment, thank you both very much. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye now. See you, Jason. See you. Bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, you might remember a few weeks ago we spoke to Rory O'Callaghan on the programme. Rory's wife Jackie died suddenly in March of this year, and he wanted to talk about Jackie and in particular pass on tickets to David Gray that Jackie had bought him as a Christmas present, and he wanted to pass them on with love. And after that interview, we got loads of texts and emails, and one in particular from Michael Herbert caught our eye. He emailed in to tell us about a Facebook group, Widowed in Ireland, which has almost 400 members. Michael is a member himself, and he joins me now along with Sarah Kiley, another member, and they want to tell us about the group and how it has helped them. Welcome, Sarah. How are you?
Thanks, Ray. Good, good.
Welcome, Michael.
Thanks, Ray.
Keely or Kylie?
Kylie.
Kylie, I got it right. Okay, I got it right. Okay. Now, Of course, Widowed in Ireland is a Facebook group that nobody wants to be a member of, isn't that?
Yeah, that's yeah. definitely it.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. But that being said, it is hugely helpful and supportive for people like yourselves. So I suppose the best thing we'll do, we'll find out about you and your loss, and then we'll find out about the group. Is that okay?
Yeah.
And Michael, because you emailed in, we'll break with tradition, not ladies first, but Michael first.
Thanks.
So Anne, your late wife then, she died, what, she died 3 years ago?
Yeah, over three and a half years ago now.
Yeah.
She diagnosed with a brain tumour about 7.5 years previously to that. And with a brain tumour, she probably one of the luckier ones in that she got 7.5 years. She got to see the kids. Mary Kate, the youngest, was only about 6 at the time, like, and she got to see him leave a national school. And
What age was she when she died?
She was 45.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
And when she died, the children were what ages?
James was 17, 15 and 13.
Right.
Yeah, so there'd been a few milestones since 21st,
yes,
18th,
yes.
leaving school,
yeah.
do you know.
Yeah. So when she got the diagnosis, the 7 years before she died,
yeah.
was the prognosis bad? Was it always going to be terminal?
They gave us a prognosis, a general prognosis, like that with a brain tumour, you don't know how it's going to react as time goes on. Like if it stays at grade 2 or 3, like, you could live for years and years yes. with it. Like, it depends on how long it takes usually to change. Like, she had, I suppose, she had an operation at time. She went and she did radiotherapy all over in, she did an operation in Beaumont. And she went on then, she had radiotherapy. And after that, then, she had a few good years. She even got driving again. Because you can't drive anywhere for a year after anything to do with a head injury or that,
surgery,
and she got
yeah.
driving again after about, I think, about a year and a half or 2 years, and she drove away again. She was delighted to get back on the road driving. But it progressed then, and she had another operation about 2 years before she died, and then she had another one a few months before she died.
Okay.
And she wasn't able for treatment. So.
And you talk about anticipatory grief.
Yeah.
What's that now?
It is just, it is only something you find out more or less about afterwards. When you see other people, like, that there's a sudden death, like, they have no time to prepare. They had no time to see somebody getting sick and getting sicker, like. Whereas, like, unfortunately, we saw the progression the whole time. Like, you knew what was happening. Like, you might always want to admit what was happening, but you always knew what was happening, like.
Mm.
So you were... I don't know, is that the right name for anticipatory grief?
Yeah, but
you're more aware of what's happening.
Of course, it's the long goodbye, really,
isn't
it? It's
a long goodbye. Like.
Yes, yeah. And like, I've had so many conversations with people about, you know, which is better, which is worse.
Yeah. And like in the group, a lot of people would actually talk about
would
that.
Would they? Right, yeah. That's interesting, yeah.
Like in the group, they talk about anything and everything. Like,
yeah.
You know, safe place.
Yeah.
Yes. I suppose if somebody dies suddenly, it's good for them. Because there was no suffering.
Well, you'd
involved.
Say that yourself now when you see it, like.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, and then.
Someone gets a heart attack. No, it's terrible for the family, like. But, you know, if somebody gets a heart attack and they're gone, oh, sure, it must be shocking. I can't anticipate what that's like.
Yes.
Because that's not what I went through.
No. And when we say the long goodbye, were there chats about
there
saying
was,
goodbye?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Maybe more so before she got very bad, but there was chats before. And yeah.
And she was probably sharing her hopes,
yeah.
and wishes
and sure,
for
even,
the children.
Even when you are bad, like, you still hope that you're going to get.
Yes,
you know, there's no such thing as. Yeah.
So would she at any point reconcile to the fact that she was going to die?
Yeah, she knew at one stage she was.
But
then she got very bad, so changing it.
Oh,
but
right. Like, yes. Of course, anything to do with the brain is going to change things.
Yeah.
Behavior and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So you lost Damien in 2018, Sarah.
Yeah, October 2018, lost Damien.
And he had liver cancer and he was sick for 9 months.
9 months, yeah.
And nothing before that?
Not an iota. He was healthy as a butcher's dog. he was very, very conscious, very... he loved his grub, but he was very conscious. Like, if we were out for a night for
a meal, he'd be having the Caesar salad and I'd be having the chicken wings.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Do you know, he was very, he kind of looked after himself.
And were you with each other a long time?
Yeah, so I met Damien when I was 18. I started training as a chef. And Damien went back, he was a chef. There was 6 years between us, so we met. He was a mature student, went back to get his formal qualification as a chef. And yeah, the rest is history.
Yeah.
I knew straight away and he said he did as well.
Ah, that lovely.
Yeah, yeah.
How many children have you got?
Emily, who's 21, and Tiernan, who's 17.
Right, so it's 4.5 years. But both your partners died in January,
yeah.
And you had a chance to say goodbye to Damien.
I did, and we had lots of frank discussions. I think Damien knew he was going to die before I knew.
Right.
And he broached the subject on numerous occasions when we were kind of having a chat in the morning. He always said, "We'll cry in the morning. We'll be done with it and we'll move
get
on.
Out of the way."
Yeah, get the crying out of the way. Yeah, in the morning time we'd have our chat about, you know, what the treatment plan looks like. And as time went on, when we knew treatment wasn't going according to plan, Damien spent a lot of time in hospital, actually, only around the corner there in St. Vincent's.
Yeah,
he was in hospital for about 12 weeks in 2018, a scorcher of a summer.
Yeah. And not to pry too much, but with those chats involved, what was going to happen when he was gone?
Yes.
With you and the children? And
yeah. He was very, very cognizant and of, like, if I'm not able to communicate, these are my wishes.
Right.
You need to be my voice for me when I can't speak. And it was very important for him to know that I was going to carry out his wishes for him.
Yeah.
He knew where he wanted he wanted to be cremated. He told me that he wanted to be up on the mantelpiece so he could keep an eye on everyone, and he's still there.
Right.
So even people come into my house now, friends or family, and they look at it, or they rub the urn, or, you know, they kind of acknowledge he's there.
Yeah, because
he is. Yeah.
And what age was he?
Damien turned 45 in August, and he died in October.
Right.
So
doing the maths, you were 39 then.
I was 39, yeah. I remember the day, actually, we were sitting in St. Vincent's, and it was the 3rd of January 2018 when we found out that Damien had cancer. And the consultant broke the news, and there was a nurse in the room as well, and he just looked at me and he looked at the consultant and he said, "I never saw myself grown old. I never thought I'd have grey hair."
Right.
And he had said that to me. He said, "I'm Peter Pan, I'm never going to get old."
And he didn't.
Yeah. And he didn't, yeah.
So you sound like a great couple, because you did something, and I know about this because I did it myself.
Yeah.
But this mad New York photographer came to Ireland, I don't know what year it was, 15 years ago or so, was it? Spencer Tunick was his name, and his shtick is that he gets loads of people to take off the clothes and he takes a picture of them.
He does.
How he's managed to do that, Michael, I don't know, but that's what he does. And he did it down in Blarney, and then he came to Dublin, and yourself and Damien did it.
We did.
Just went off, sort of.
I'm blaming you for this, by the way.
Right.
So anyone that comes into my house, the picture's in the bathroom.
Right.
So I would be very reserved, and Damien was a bit more carefree than me. So we'd always listen to you when we were in morning radio. And I said, "Damien, will we do that?" And he said, "Sure, why not?" And I said, "Are you serious?" He said, "Ara, sure, look, we'll go." And you had framed it in such a way that you could change your mind any time.
Mm-hmm. I don't know why I was giving anybody authority to change your mind or do it in the first place, but there you go. Because it's nothing to do with me, really, apart from the fact that I did it in Blarney. Yeah. So you came up from, were you living
in Limerick? We drove up, yeah, we were in Limerick. We drove up. We didn't tell anyone we were doing it, and actually no one knew for years.
Right.
So no one knew, only us. Everyone thought we were going to Dublin to go and see Republic of Blues,
right.
Who were playing in the Academy that night.
And instead you went out. It was out, where was it out?
Do you know where the big stacks are?
Is that
Sandymount?
Yeah, Sandymount, yeah.
Yeah.
And can you spot yourself in the picture?
No.
Because there's about 1,000 people, is there?
Yeah. It looks just like a sea of flesh.
Yeah. How did you find it?
Terrifying.
Right.
Terrifying. And Damien kept saying, Just look down.
No, don't look down. Where are we going to look?
Where are we going to look?
Yeah. That's a lovely memory, though, isn't it?
Well, do you know what? When you get to a point where I am, and I suppose myself and Mike are kind of on the same page, because we've the same time scale now in our grief
and
in our journey, and we can talk about Mike can talk about Anne and I can talk about Damien very openly, very easily. And memories are very important.
Yes.
They're very important.
Now, you're saying that you're at a point where you can do that.
Yeah.
So, Michael, for a while there isn't, you can't. You can't talk about your deceased partner.
No, you can't. Well, you can, but like, it needs someone else to bring it up, Nilla.
All right.
But now, like, if you meet people, you can talk about it. And
so what was it like immediately after Anne died?
It's like we were just talking about it earlier, like, you're just like, everything you ever thought you were going to do in your life has changed from that day on. Because, like, all your plans always involve, like, when the kids get a bit bigger now, we get away more weekends. When the kids are gone, we'll do this. Yeah. All that is gone. Like, just in an instant, there's no two ways about it. Like, it's just finished. And it takes you an awful long time to probably find yourself again, like. Yeah. And, like, I don't know, for me, like, I see a lot in the widow groups, like, you'd be at home at night, it is very lonesome, like.
Yeah.
So you said the mornings were worse, but I always found the nights worse, like.
Yeah.
Like, it's very easy, open a bottle of whiskey, down a couple of glass of whiskey. Yeah, and
not good.
Not good.
No.
But, like, it's a general trend in the widow group, like, what other people have done it, like.
Yeah.
Not maybe a lot now, but it is general enough in the
area. It's a coping mechanism.
Yeah, but you do that for a while as well, like.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, fucking give yourself a kick, like, and get on with this now. And, like, I went back to work within, I'd say, 2 weeks. But I did that because I needed to do that. I needed to be busy. And that was my way of doing it, like.
And how did you happen upon the group?
Well, I'll tell you what happened now. We're going to the group. It's Caroline O'Brien, another widow. I'd have known her husband. I didn't know her. She's from Limerick. She messaged me there one day, or rang me or something, and she just said, I was thinking of setting up a Facebook group for just people in Ireland, because there is widow groups on Facebook, like, but they're English, they're American, and as I said, like, the Irish empathy is different to the other ones, and the Irish way of life, like. So she said, I set up a Facebook group, would you be interested in giving me a hand? So I said, yeah, right. So that was 3.5 years ago. The first year we started when it'd been 9 or 10, it went up to about 40 or 50 in the first year. And it kind of stayed at that. And we, that time anyone would post, you felt nearly there, you have, I better reply to this now and everything. But now with 380 members, like, or 390 even now, there's little pockets all over the country now, like.
Yeah.
There's people meeting for coffee, there's people meeting for lunch.
Yeah.
Like, you can put a post up at 8 o'clock in the morning or 5 o'clock in the morning. Someone will answer you.
Yeah.
There is somebody on.
And it's an unfortunate shared experience.
It is, yeah.
Because I can talk to you till the cows come home, but I won't really, at the end of it, truly understand your experience.
That's what's unique about this group. And I'm so grateful to Caroline and Mike and Aileen and the other moderators in the group that provide that space. It just wasn't there.
How did you come upon it?
Mike told me about it, because I met Mike through Milford Hospice. It was kind of a support group where Damien and Anne passed away. They do fantastic work out there, and it was like a group session, and I totally just didn't want to be there at all, and I decided to keep going, give it a go.
Yeah.
And I became friends with Mike then and one or two other people in the group. And then Mike said to me one day, do you know about the group on Facebook? And that was it. But it's just, it's lived experience for people who can relate. Everything, there's nothing out of bounds in the group. Someone will validate what you're going through, which is very important, because sometimes you think you're going mad.
Mm.
You especially
like that thing, the mornings, did I read that you said it or somebody said it, that there's that moment in the morning where you think,
forget.
Yeah, that Damien's still alive.
The second I wake up in the morning, I think, is this real, is he really not here? Because we spent 21 years together, and I'm able to say it now, before I wouldn't be able to say it, I'd cry. But I had the most wonderful life, and I thought, God, look at this. How lucky am I? How lucky are we? We've two children. We both have jobs that some days we love and some days we hate. We had our ups and downs. We were in negative equity. We nearly lost our house. We've been through all the things that people identify with, and we came out the other side, and then we get this.
Mm.
And it was It was bad. It was really bad. Really dark.
And did you get mad at the world?
Oh, very cross.
Yeah, very cross.
Oh, very cross. Sound like my mother. Oh, I was very cross. No, but I was very cross. Yeah. I was very cross and I was very angry with, and I suppose a bit resentful as well. Like, why does this happen? Why does this happen to us? Why us? Mm. Why Mike? Why Anne? Yeah. Why me? Why Damien?
It's completely random, isn't it?
It is, yeah, completely random. Yeah.
But you can say all those things in a safe space in the group.
You can, yeah. And for people in the group as well, like at the moment we're just talking outside like about this communion confirmation season now, right? Like people are putting up pictures of their child and they're all missing someone. They get great support in knowing there's 10 more people in the group going through the same thing as them. Mm. We were saying the 1st of September or whatever they start
first
national
back,
school. Especially the first day back for the first junior infants going in. Like there will be people again.
Yeah. And you mentioned the 21st as well.
Yeah, you know, my son's 21st was only a couple of months after my wife died. Like, you know, and it was a family, the first family event really that was on. Like, and but we did it. And
now,
we,
this chapter 2, I'd imagine, is a very sticky topic, isn't it? Because... All right. Well, who wants to explain what chapter 2 is then?
Well,
Mike. Not me.
Well, it just, it's a name that was actually given more with other groups than our group, but that's what they said. Like, if you go into a second relationship with somebody, like, that's the kind of, you say, your chapter 2, like. Yeah.
I'm just thinking, the issues, you know, do you feel like you're nearly being unfaithful to your late
you
partner?
Feel, well, I tell you, like, you nearly feel guilt, maybe not for the relationship, but you nearly feel guilt for living.
Yeah.
Right.
And guilt for enjoying life again.
Yes.
More than
the relationship. Like,
yes.
You know,
yes.
You're at an event or anything, like, and you're having a good time, like, and you, it wouldn't affect me as much now, but for a while it did, like, if you're at an event, you're enjoying it, like, you nearly feel like, oh, Jesus, I shouldn't be nearly enjoying myself, like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I find that very difficult to, like, as part of my job, I have to go to things. And I always go on my own. And I feel, do you know, it's very hard to go to something on your own.
Yeah.
You get used to it, and I'm okay with it now. But it was a killer. You say no to things because you don't want to go on your own. And then people stop asking you to go to things.
Yes, yes, they become isolated.
Very lonely and
isolated.
Yeah,
yeah. So both the chapter 2s.
No.
I am. You are. Sorry, sir.
I'm not.
You're not a chapter 2, right. So what about your children? Because is that, and is this discussed in the group? If you're going to start another relationship.
100% is discussed in the group.
Yes.
Yeah, 100% has been discussed a few times in the group.
Right.
It gives people hope.
But it gives people hope at the minute. But you, like with your own children, you just have to be honest with them.
You do.
Like if you're going out or whatever, meeting someone, whenever you did, like there's, you can't not tell them, like. Mm. And you can't keep any of this. Like, you have to be honest with people. Like, that's what it is. That's my life.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't mean always everyone will agree with you or everyone thinks it's right. But you've lived your life.
Yes, yeah.
You get to a point where you know that you have to look after you. And that's very important in any... Like, I wish someone had said that to me after Damien died. Please look after yourself. So I'd like to say that to people, anyone listening, please look after yourself first. If you don't want to be somewhere, leave. If you don't want to go somewhere, say no. If you want to get somewhere and want to leave, make an excuse.
Okay. And I would imagine, because both of you were very young when, you know, you became a widow and a widower, that people are a bit awkward in your company.
They are.
Are they? Yeah.
And, it's a conversation ender.
Yes. Well, and even if there is a conversation, people probably say the wrong things. And they're probably well-intentioned.
They say horrendous things. Right.
Well, like...
Like, I remember going to something.
Husband.
Oh, your
ex-wife.
I was told about a month after Damien died, someone said to me, sure, you're still young. You'll probably meet someone else.
Right.
A month. I felt like choking her. I actually thought it upset me so much. Because you want to be faithful to the person you thought you'd spend the rest of your life with. And you feel that you're doing them an injustice by not being faithful.
Yeah.
But for me and from the conversations myself and Damien had, he said, Sarah, when I'm gone, you will still have your life ahead of you and it would be lovely for you to be happy again. I thought that was horrendous.
That he said it to you?
Oh, I was devastated, even as if I couldn't be more devastated. But he did say it.
He gave you permission to be with somebody else.
He...
Is that... What do you think?
Permission is a strange word now when it comes to... Take your foot out of your mouth there, will you?
No, but what would you say it?
Well, okay. Yeah, I suppose. I've never heard it kind of put like that.
What way would you say it then?
Well, he kind of...
Don't spare my blushes now. I'm fine. I'm thick-skinned enough.
Yeah, he just said, look, I'm not going to be around... you're going to be very young. You need company. We're made to be with, you know, we're made to be
social. People.
In social, yeah. We're made to be loved, and we're made to give love.
He gave you his blessing.
His blessing.
Is that a better way?
And he was religious, so a blessing is a lovely thing to say.
Right.
Good job.
You got out of that.
Good job. Okay. Now you obviously this is a closed group, and it's hugely important that predatory people don't prey on vulnerable people.
It's a very safe group.
So it's a very safe group.
For that, now everybody is checked.
Yeah.
Before they come in, we'd ask for either a screenshot of an RIP. Or we'd ask for a link to the RIP or a screenshot of an obituary or death certificate, something.
Of course,
before they
just
come
to
in,
make sure. Yeah. Well, sad but hopeful. So beyond grief, there is hope, isn't that? Yeah.
But look after yourself first.
Look after yourself. It's like that the old thing on the airplane. You give yourself oxygen first. Isn't that it? Michael, lovely to meet you.
Thank you, Ray.
Sarah, lovely to meet you.
Thanks.
Yeah, mind yourselves. We have to take a quick commercial break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, and Michael and Sarah are in a group on Facebook called Widowed in Ireland. Widowed in Ireland. If you're on Facebook and put that in, you will find them. Anish Tosha now, and the Preskelton and Ulta, Marion Ihulawan. Good Marion. Thank you very much. 51551, ray@rte.ie. Now, the Widowed in Ireland Facebook group has been a godsend for me. My husband Derek passed away in April 2019. I joined the group that summer. Without their support and listening and understanding ears, I'd be lost. It's a real safe place. Well done to Michael and Sarah, says Sandra in Donegal. And only for the Widowed in Ireland group, I would probably have not survived grief and have gone to meetups with Michael, and would like to thank him and Caroline, who set up the group. That's Kevin in Galway. And just wanted to congratulate Michael and Sarah for speaking today. It's not an easy thing to do. We're so proud of you from Aileen and all the Widowed in Ireland group. And somebody else says the hardest time is when you close the door behind you. That's when you need the friends. And just tuning in, what's the name of the group? Widowed in Ireland is the group. And I'm crying as I write this, listening to those widow and widower. They're talking about me and my heart is broken. I'm 1 year in and my life has changed drastically. That's heartbroken, Jay. Mind yourself, Jay. And you heard Sarah's advice. Mind yourself. Mind yourself. Now, 51551 ray@rte.ie. I've got, which is, you know, it's hard to come out the other side of that, but I have in front of me two potato magazines. And we'll be talking to the lady who brought them in to me very shortly, because you know Ireland is hosting the World Potato Conference. So loads about potatoes and sampling of potato milk very shortly. But first we have to get to our quiz, and we have a great prize this week, and it's a 2-night stay at the 4-star Fairways Hotel located in the heart of Dundalk. You can find out more at fairwayshotel.ie. You can discover Dundalk's beautiful scenery, history and heritage. It's a 2-night stay and dinner on one evening. On the line we have Mary Martin Sullivan. How are you doing, Mary Martin Sullivan?
Hi, Ray.
That's a West Cork name, if ever I heard one.
Oh, absolutely.
So whereabouts in West Cork are you?
I'm in Castletown there on the Barry Peninsula.
Aha, what a beautiful part of the world.
Yeah, I know, you know it.
I do. Were you born and reared there, were you?
Born and reared, yeah.
Yeah. And do you know when you're born and reared in some place, do you appreciate it as much as people who visit
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely,
you do?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I worked away from here a few times, and just even coming home, oh well, there's you go up Cool Air, as we call it, and just go over that top and you just see up ahead of you, and you just go, your heart just flips. Yeah.
I remember
the scenery here is gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. I remember the first time I cycled the Mara Peninsula and going up to Dalhousie's out of Castletown Bear and going through a gap and seeing the vista in front of you and going, wow,
yeah,
I can't get any better than this. And then you go through another gap and it does get better than that. And on and on. Yeah. So you knew about Colin Farrell's birthday because you've worked with him.
I have. He was here in Castletown Bear in 1996.
Right.
And that was my baptism into the film industry, as they were doing Falling for a Dancer here. So he was on that series. That was a Dare to Person series. And
so he was only a young lad back then.
He was very young, and he was a bit wild, but he was a lovely guy, and he still is a lovely guy because I was working with him last year.
He is a lovely guy. Like, he does great work. I know of with Deborah Ireland. I'm sure he does loads of other things as well. And he is a lovely guy. Did he do something else down that way then? Was there something?
He did Ondine as well.
Was more recently. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That was in 2009.
Sharon was involved in that in some way as well.
She was, and she was on. I was on the Banshees of Inisherin with them last year in the west of Ireland.
I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, it will be good.
I've read about it and we've spoken to a couple of people who are in it. It sounds a bit mad and a bit wonderful.
And again, the scenery there is amazing as well.
Yeah. Now, who's at home? You've four adult children.
I have four adult children. They're all flown the nest. So well and truly. I've Aisling is in Kildare. I have Rachel in East Cork.
Right.
Cillian is in Carlow at the moment, and my son is in Adrigal, just over the road from
Adrigal, near Iries. Yes.
No, near Glengariff.
Near Glengariff. Oh yeah.
He's settled there, but he's on cruise ship, so he's away at the moment. He's in an officer in cruise
ship. Right. Okay. You're up against Shane Rappel, who's in Gorey in County Wexford. How are you doing, Shane?
Hi, Ray. How are you? You well?
Good. So we spoke 20 years ago, I believe.
Yeah, thereabouts. I think it was 22, 23. I got a mini disc player from you.
Right.
At the time.
Well, what did you do to deserve a mini disc player?
I can't recall. It was some texting competition at the time. I got lucky.
Right. Okay. Because I used to do the great giveaway show on 2FM. That was probably it.
For
a while. Yeah. Right. What are you up to now, Shane?
I just finished work, actually. I work in Arklow, and I'm just outside of Gorey waiting to pick up my son, Declan, who's probably listening now, actually, because I told someone to have him listen in.
All right, okay. And what age is Declan?
He'll be 6 there on the 2nd of August.
Right, okay. And what sort of stuff is he into?
The usual Pokemon, Lego, Star Wars, everything I was into as a kid, I suppose.
Right, because they come round again, don't they?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
It's just like my son is obsessed with Sonic at the moment.
Yeah, he loves Sonic as well. He's probably going, oh, yeah, Sonic. Like, you'd be agreeing with what you're saying now.
Oh, right. Okay. Any plans? I know it's only Tuesday, but any plans for the long weekend?
Weather permitting, hopefully we'll be hitting the beach or heading to Cortown Amusements, you know. Yourself,
You're spoiled for beaches down there, aren't you?
Yeah.
Right, so it's 3 clips each, and if you go for a long clip, you get 1 point. Go for a shorter clip, it's more difficult, so you get 2 points. Whoever has the most points at the end is the winner. If it's a draw in points, we go to a tie-break question. Good luck to Mary and good luck to Shane. Here we go. Okay, Mary, the year is 2007. 2007, right, which is what, 15 years ago. And we're starting at the movies. Would you like a short clip or a long clip?
Oh, give me a long one, please.
A long one, okay. In 2007, this movie starring Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman was a big hit, particularly with older audiences. Can you name it? And here is your long clip.
Technically, we could cross off 2 items. See the pyramids and witness something majestic. This is about as majestic as it gets.
Wait till you see my mountain.
Oh, yeah.
Any ideas?
The only thing that's coming into my head is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but I'm not sure.
No. That was a good bit. That was in the 80s,
oh,
I think. It's The Bucket List. There was a bit of a hint there, but it's easy to see a hint when you know the answer.
Yeah.
The Bucket List. Okay. Shane. So a chance for you to go in front. Still 2007, still at the movies. Do you want to go long or short?
I'll go along.
Go along. Okay, this 2007 comedy was about an unplanned pregnancy starring Seth Rogen and Katherine Heigl. Can you name it? And here's your long clip.
I don't have to tell them. It's illegal for them to fire me over it anyway. And I get 3 months maternity leave if I stay. So I'm just, you know, not going to tell them.
It's a good plan.
Yeah, I like it. It is a good plan until her water breaks all over Robert De Niro's shoes. My shoes, hey, there's all this baby goo on it.
And it is.
I'll go Knocked Up.
Yeah, you'd be right. Yeah, it also starred Jonah Hill and Paul Rudd, so you get a point for that. Okay, back to you, Mary. It's music from 2007. Long or short?
I go long again.
Long again, okay. This song topped the charts in Ireland 2007. Can you name the song or the singer? Here's your long clip. You're so fine, I want you, mine, you're so delicious. Any ideas?
Oh, good God. Oh, I wish I knew what year I was going for. My son was a DJ. I would have known all the other ones. Way back then.
Your son's a DJ, is he? All right.
He was. But, oh, God. Yes, of all the bloody music blaring, but I'm sorry. No.
Any name? No. Did you want to throw out there?
Nothing.
No. Avril Lavigne. Avril Lavigne. Girlfriend was the name of the song. Okay.
All right.
Now, let's see. Shane, if you go short and get it right, Mary can't catch you.
Yeah.
If you go long, get it right, then Mary can catch you, but you will have a question in hand. So what are you going to do?
We go short.
You go short. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Song was a hit for an American rapper in 2007. Can you name the song or the rapper? Here is your short clip to win today's quiz. Man, I've been waiting all night now. That's how long
I've been on ya. Yeah, Kanye West.
It is Kanye West. Stronger.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, cheers. Sorry, Mary. Well done. Sorry.
Well done, you.
You four adult children and six grandchildren, and he's going to collect his soon-to-be six-year-old. So that says it all, really, doesn't it? You know, about where you are in your lives and what was relevant in 2007 and what wasn't relevant. Anyway, Mary, hard luck. It was great talking to you, and
you
sort of transported me back to Castletown Bear. We'll have to go down. Yes, we'll have to go.
We met during Queen of the Field many years ago.
Oh, God, that was a mad night. I've just got flashbacks there. Okay. Right, Mary.
Okay,
see you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Shane, well done. Shane,
thank you.
You are now going to go to the Fairways Hotel in Dundalk with a person of your choice. It's a 4-star hotel. You can find out what's in store for you at fairwayshotel.ie.
Brilliant.
Well done, Shane. Mind yourself. Good luck.
Cheers.
See you. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, there's coffees made on potato milk. There's muesli with potato milk. There's potato magazines. And we're going to be talking everything spuds after this. Now, that's the hottest flowers and don't go. Did you know, and you probably did, that the World Potato Congress, as opposed to conference, is taking place in Dublin? Today's day two of the 3-day event, with 1,000 delegates from over 60 countries who are hashing out all kinds of issues surrounding the humble spud, including new breeds and nutrition. Georgia Thomas is from Western Australia Potatoes and came to the Congress to talk about potato nutrition. Joins me now in studio. Hello, Georgia.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Welcome to Ireland. I believe it's your first time.
It is indeed, yep.
Yes, you've come to the home of the potato.
I have, it's amazing.
Which isn't factually correct, actually.
No, it isn't.
Could you know that the home of the potato is in where?
Peru.
Peru, yes. Did you know that Sir Walter Raleigh brought the potato to Ireland?
I did not, no.
Yeah, I think we were the first European country to have potatoes.
Right. Yeah.
But you know all about nutrition.
I
would say that in this country, probably because of our history and the famine and all that, that the potato is much maligned. And you're here to set the record straight.
Well, it's really interesting, though, you say that, because I was listening to some presentations today and Irish people eat 85 kilos per capita per year of potatoes. In Australia, we only eat 18.
Right.
The difference is massive. But either way, I've been told that some of the issues around carbohydrates and nutrition are the same and consumption is declining of fresh potatoes.
Yeah, well, there's competition now. There's rice and pasta. When I was growing up, like, nobody ate pasta.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It was all spuds, and a meal wasn't a complete meal unless you had potatoes in it.
Yeah.
But like things that I didn't know, for example, vitamin C in potatoes?
Yep, there's heaps of vitamin C.
Yes, yeah. Yep. What else?
Potassium, more potassium than bananas.
Okay.
Yep.
There's roughage? Yes,
fibre, lots of fibre, resistant starch. Right. There's folate and magnesium as well. Okay. There's heaps of good stuff in potatoes. It's more than just a carbohydrate.
Yeah, and it is a vegetable.
Yeah, it's a vegetable. It's grown in the ground. It's a whole food.
But that's the odd thing, because when you talk about your five a day, people don't think vegetables. They don't think potatoes. They think, you know,
and that really bugs me.
Does it?
It's part of why I get passionate about potatoes, because I want people to remember they're a vegetable. It's okay. If your kids only ate potatoes, they'd be doing well.
Yes, we spoke to an Australian guy, actually, Andrew Taylor, and he was on this bizarre fitness regime. And he decided he was going to eat nothing but potatoes.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And Lost weight. Yeah, and he was a very healthy man.
He was, yeah. I mean, we generally don't encourage to be that extreme, but it's a good example of the fact that they are really nutritionally whole food. Yeah. You can get a lot of goodness out of a spud.
I love your introduction. Hi, I'm Georgia. I'm passionate about potatoes.
It's true. It's been over 10 to 20 years now working with the potato industry. Yeah.
So what else do we need to know then?
What do we need to know? Okay, well, you've got to keep the skin on a potato. Right. You lose 50% of the nutrients if you peel them, so it's quicker to cook.
So that's a fact, because we would have heard that as kids. Yeah,
absolutely. Try and eat coloured potatoes. The more colour, the better, so they have more antioxidants in them and things like that.
Like the pink ones?
Pink or red or purple, any of the coloured ones.
The brown one's not good.
Well, they're still good.
But brown is a colour.
But if you want a bit more...
strictly speaking.
If you're more brightly coloured, eating the rainbow of potatoes.
Yes.
And one of the things we've recently discovered is that if you cook and cool your potatoes, it increases the resistant starch, which is really great for gut health. So if you want to eat a potato salad, you know you're going to get even more nutrition out of that potato.
So cook and cool.
Yeah, cooked and cooled. Basically, there's a lot of fibre in a potato, but resistant starch is really important for building good bacteria in your gut. So, yeah, that's one thing that they discovered. If you cook them and cool them, just pop them in the fridge.
What's the crack like down at the Congress?
Yeah. It's good. It's really interesting. I mean, I have to admit, I've told a lot of people at home, I'm like, I'm going on my first trip since COVID. Where are you going? To Dublin for the World Potato Congress. And they do think it's hilarious, but it's also, I'm so excited to be here. It's fantastic.
And just globally, sort of serious question, the potato industry is obviously trying to put a spin on it, which is all fact. It's not a spin, it's just to get the facts out there about potatoes.
Absolutely. And I mean, there's two sides to this conference. There's the one where you're talking about Western culture and we're trying to eat less carbs or whatever it is, but there's also the side where you're trying to feed impoverished countries as well, and it's such a great nutritional resource for people in those places. And one of the presentations today actually talked about iron fortified potatoes, which is part of the International Potato Centre research, which is so important for...
Would they be genetically
modified? I'm not exactly sure the process that they use. Yeah. It's biofortification, but it makes a big difference to people in those communities as well. So it's a really important food source in the world.
Yeah, I found out today that sweet potatoes aren't really potatoes.
I know, it's
They're
a bit depressing.
Roots.
Yeah. We don't talk about sweet potatoes. They're our competitor.
How did they manage to get that name? Surely there's some law.
There should be.
You can't just call yourself a potato if you're not a potato.
There's something wrong there.
Peanuts aren't nuts either.
No, they're
legumes. Come on. Right. Okay.
Okay.
We're quite excited because we're sad people that we have some potato milk in studio.
Oh.
What a brilliant name, Georgia.
Doug.
Doug is the name. It's as far as I can see, it's made in Sweden. Because we know now, unfortunately, Ukraine are one of the biggest producers of potatoes in the world. We're third in Europe, I think. Ireland.
Yeah. I think so, yeah. And China's a big producer as well.
Right. We have sweetened and original. Unsweetened and original. So I'm going to try the original because that's the type of man I am. Have you sampled?
I haven't. I've been dying to try it.
Okay.
And I was going to do it in the privacy of my own home, but that's okay.
Can I just the colour is noticeable in that there's sort of a grey in it, isn't there?
Yeah, it does remind me a bit of almond milk. I have to be dairy-free, unfortunately. But it reminds me of that sort of that sort of
it's all, it's all that you have to be dairy free and you have never sampled potato milk and you work in the potato industry.
I know, it's a bit, how there's a happen? Lot of things going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on. Because okay. Like this is a colour you'd probably pick for your, you know, maybe for your kitchen or your
it's a beautiful cream tone.
It's sort of an off white. Okay. Yeah.
Are you going just plain or with the coffee?
I'm going to go plain. From a family of people who delivered milk.
Okay.
My grandfather, my auntie, my dad, all delivered milk. So we used to drink it straight from the bottle. We used to have races to see who could drink a pint of milk fastest.
Good stuff.
So I know good milk is what I'm saying.
Okay,
so
let's do it.
That's not bad at all.
It's not that bad. No. It's actually got a nutty sort of flavour.
Oh, is it?
That's not a sweetened one.
That's the original one.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, a little bit of an aftertaste.
Right, of potatoes. that would make sense.
The sweetened one's amazing.
Is it? Right, I'll try the sweetened one.
Yeah.
So there's added sugar, obviously, then, is there?
Yeah, there must be in that one. Well, I normally would go unsweetened, but that's actually... I reckon be good in the coffee.
Nah, no, I prefer the original. that's blah, 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 blah. No, I don't like that at all. You know, I think I was telling people here.
That's good.
But we were away in London during midterm break and we were staying in a hotel and I came down to breakfast and there were all these various jugs of oat milk, soya milk, potato milk, skimmed milk. They'd no full-fat milk.
Oh,
no,
really?
No full-fat milk. I had to ask for it.
Oh, geez. Well, that makes... That's what I would usually have to do if you wanted a non-dairy milk. So it's kind of like the tables have turned. There's
completely.
More plant-based products out there.
We should be more inclusive.
Yeah, we should be more inclusive.
Do you want a coffee made on...
I have coffee here.
Oh, you have a coffee. Oh, where is it? Oh, here's mine. Yeah, right.
It's actually delicious with the coffee.
This is made on potato milk.
Mm-hmm. I would drink that. That's yum. Beautiful.
I'm sorry, but it smells like mackerel.
There's no milk in that.
There's no milk in it? All right. That's just the coffee then, right?
Let's try it.
No, it was made with milk. It was made with milk. God. We nearly have to go now. Georgia, thanks so much for coming in. Enjoy the rest of your three-day Congress, the World Potato Congress, which is on in the RDS. And thanks for setting the record straight on a number of myths surrounding potatoes.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. It's awesome to be here.
We didn't get a chance to talk with the man from New Zealand who thought he had the biggest potato in the world. And what was it in the end?
Oh, I can't even... A gourd, I think.
Was it? Yeah. It wasn't a potato?
No, it wasn't a potato.
And he was so happy about the thing. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
How do I get a job like hers? I love spuds.
Well, you just have to fall into it, really. It sort of just works out that
way. Thanks, Georgia. That's it from us and our various types of potato milk. Cormac is on the way with Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening. Good luck.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.